Well, welcome back. We are in, moving to module three already. And then since we're going to continue talking about tuning SQL Server for SharePoint Jumpstart, again, we want to thank you for taking time out of your busy day for joining us today. And we've got some fantastic questions coming in, so we're going to address a few of those before we get started in this module, and we'll continue on.
Yep. A couple of the questions that we've seen, particularly around remote blob storage. One earlier we answered, which is, does shredding apply to RBS blobs? The answer to that question is obviously yes. We answered that one in the last module, so effectively, yes, your RBS blobs would be shredded as well. Another question we got a couple of times is, does shredding apply to a specific file type, or is it agnostic of file type? And the answer to that question is it's agnostic of file type. So for example, you upload an ISO image, that file would be shredded as well. So it's very file type agnostic. And then lastly, on Twitter, I checked the Twitter side, and it looks like there's a couple of questions out there. One was making sure that everybody understood that Brian's adding underscore DB was a joke and it doesn't actually improve performance.
That's good, definitely.
We're actually going to do some testing to see if it does.
There we go. Definitely. But, we'll get back to you.
And then the other one was his statistic that 93.8% of all content is stored in the database. It's actually 93.73.
Oh, so it's okay.
That one was nice. Just a random statistic as well.
Nice.
Because
very good.
Brian decided to pull that one out and drop it out there on the community. But Brian's going to go ahead and kick off the next module again in regular fashion. As you can see, the number of coffee cups I've accumulated continues to grow for those that pay attention to those.
Yeah, I've just got my single cup of water. But
I'm going to go ahead and let Brian kick it off, and while he does, I'll try to answer some more questions. So if your question hasn't been answered yet, we're working feverishly to get to them. There's a lot of good ones out there.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks for chiming in on the questions as well. And we're going to, again, continue on it. And this time, we're going to talk about what we've done so far is kind of level the playing field and talk about, hey, this is what SQL does. This is what SharePoint does. And for the SharePoint admins, hopefully got them comfortable with, you know, the checkpoint process, recovery, full recovery versus simple, and database and LDFs and MDFs. So when you're talking to DBAs over that lunch, you're going to buy them once a month. You're going to have a pretty good understanding as to what's going on. Then we went through best practices on database settings, specifically the model database. Threw in a couple caveats out there. The fact that we create a database from inside of SharePoint, you don't get those autogrowth settings that you set in the model database. Or if you create it from inside of SQL Server, you have to make sure you have that collation setting. And the best thing you can do, as we addressed in the first module, is check, you know, set that collation during the install, and then you don't have to worry about it. We're now going to look at some of the default database file locations and memory settings. So now we're kind of going up to the server level. What can I do for this instance? So what we've trying to show you throughout the course today, it's really, really important for you to have a dedicated instance of SQL Server for SharePoint, for your farm. As Bill alluded to earlier today, it's like the farm config is your entire farm, and a lot of configuration of information stored there. I was at a place that had three installations of SharePoint in one instance of SQL. And we try to have a dedicated instance of SQL Server per farm, if you have multiple farms, and furthermore, try not to share an instance of SQL Server with other products, because then you can't go out and change things like we've done with a model database. They may have different needs for their model database sizes. They may have different needs for the collation setting that's required by SharePoint. So really, really important for you to make those get a dedicated instance of SQL Server for your SharePoint installation, first off, and then secondly, what we've already shown you a few areas where that's going to be beneficial. Now we're going to dig in to a couple more settings, not so much that they're specific to SharePoint installations, but there are settings that your DBA most likely has already set, but you need to be aware about in case you're the dual role of the DBA and the SharePoint administrator. So we're going to go ahead and dig into module three about that. So again, we're talking about the SQL Server instance settings. Maximum memory, we're going to talk about that first. Default file locations, we're going to talk about the collation. Kind of probably beat that up already, but if you can't set it during the default, it's too late. You can't go set the model. I'll just show you. I'll try to set the model. Says, dude, you can't do that. And then the max degree of parallelism. If you read online about what that is, you'll probably hear some stuff on setting it to numbers that probably won't be beneficial for SharePoint. So we'll talk about that. And then operating system settings. There's actually just a file system level setting that would be beneficial for SharePoint as well. So first off, SQL Server instance settings. What do I need to do for my instance of SQL Server dedicated to SharePoint? As you can see here, when we come in here, we have a default maximum memory setting. So by default, when you install SQL Server, it will give that instance of SQL Server, just that instance, 2,147,483,647 megabytes of RAM. If you have one of those machines, please type in what company you work for, because I'd really like to go out and see what kind of opportunities they have there. If they can afford that much RAM, I don't even know what that is. It's like 2 gazillion gigabytes or terabytes or something. But anyways, that's a lot of RAM. And what SQL, the way SQL behaves, a SQL Server is kind of selfish when it comes to working with other instances of SQL Server, other products that happen to be running on that server. If you just have a server that's running SQL and Active Directory and DNS and Wins and Exchange, and hopefully you don't have that environment. But if you do, SQL Server will kind of take the lead on that, and they'll take whatever RAM it needs. So if your other operating system, or if your other application, or if you're if you have multiple instances of SQL Server, one seems to be getting a better performance than the other. Well, the first one in wins. So if someone goes in, if I boot up, if I've got my instance of SQL Server for SharePoint, and I've got another instance of SQL Server for my line of business apps, and my line of business apps come in and start asking for memory, it's going to give that SQL Server instance memory. And as you can see, there's no limit to what I'll give it. So now my SharePoint people start coming in and start trying to do their work. There's not enough memory for both instances to share. So you want to set a maximum memory setting on that. And I'll show you how to do that when we go into the demo. We want to do a maximum memory on both of them. So let's say, for instance, we got 64 gigs on our machine. I always just give 4 to the operating system. That's just a gimme. Give 4 to the operating system. And then now I've got 60 left to play with. I don't have to make them even. I could say my SQL Server instance for my line of business app, there's a lot going on back there. I'm going to give them 40 gigabytes, and I'm going to go in and set this max memory, and I'll show you how to do that shortly. And then I'm going to go into my instance for SharePoint, and I'm going to give that 20 gigabytes as a max. What this will do, this will prevent from the first instance, the LOB instance, line of business instance, from consuming so much memory that my SharePoint instance doesn't have anything to work with. The other thing, and vice versa, my SharePoint instance only needs 20, it'll never exceed the 20 gigabytes. So that'll make sure the line of business apps always has plenty of RAM to work with when it's fired up. So that's something very, very critical that you need to understand, is what's going on that box. Is this just one server, one instance of SQL Server dedicated to SharePoint? I would still cap this out to leave room for the operating system, so it doesn't have any issues with causing performance degradation with the operating system. But if you have other applications on there or other instances on there, then you may want to address that by maxing the amount of memory per instance. And again, they don't have to be even. You can set them accordingly to what will be required. Now, this is just the slide that we love. We added in here, we were gonna pull it, but we just thought it was just too cool to not put in there. So, for any of those who might be like, Sheldons from Big Bang Theory, if you can figure that out and chat that back to us, we would be more than happy to talk to this. So if there's a Sheldon individual in the room, figure this baby out and get us a number. And by the way, we won't know if it's correct or not. So if you throw something out there and say you're, bazinga, you're good. You got it. But we saw this and we were laughing at it. It's like, what does it all mean? Total physical memory minus number of SQL threads. Well, what is the number of SQL threads? Well, that's in the second line. And so you have to do the math for that. Then you multiply that for the thread stack size, which is on the third line. Then you do some subtractions of a gigabyte times the ceiling divided by the number of cores divided by 4. So Sheldon's probably already got this figured out and posted, but we thought it was just interesting to post that.
Yeah, I think what Brian's trying to say is it looked pretty cool, so yeah. We included it in here. But the net of the story is obviously from a planning perspective, when you think about SQL Server and you think about SharePoint, SQL Server is obviously, from a planning perspective, it's complex, and SharePoint's dynamic nature adds to that complexity. It makes it a little more challenging to plan around, because obviously, it is very dynamic. It supports multiple workloads. Each has a different profile, and each requires different types of resources. So looking at that, you can look at a number like that, which could probably be the best way to set maximum memory, but we're trying to give you general recommendations and guidance. To that point, just to try to answer a number of questions that came in. A lot of questions around SQL 2012 and FileTable. What's the story with FileTable and SharePoint Server either 2010 or 2013? If you've read the TechNet article, we're not going to add support for SQL Server 2012 in the SharePoint 2010 timeframe until SP2, to which, just like with older versions of SharePoint, you'll slipstream and then install. For SQL or for SharePoint Server 2013, we support it fully on SQL Server 2012. In terms of FileTable and some of the capabilities that you can leverage and implement, we're going to be putting together a best practices or a better together white paper, as we've traditionally done with our SQL Server partners as well as Windows Server, to kind of give you some guidance on what features you can and cannot leverage with SharePoint. So just keep an eye out for that content that will be upcoming. I'm going to go ahead and turn it back over to Brian. He's going to talk about some of the default file locations. We recommend you keep everything on the system drive.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, everything on the C drive, that we know where it is. You don't have to worry, go shopping around, where did I store this? But now let's talk by default. Guess what? That's the way it is out of the box. So this is a screenshot of a default installation. Your data file is on the C drive. Your log files on the C drive, and SQL 2012, they even have the backups on the C drive. And there's nothing better than having your backups on the C drive. That way, you know, if you lose a C drive, you don't have to worry about a restore because you've lost your backups. So that would probably be another RPE if that was taken care of properly. But these are the default settings, and as you can see, I've just gone into the server properties. So this is just another instance setting here. One of the database settings, and you'll see in SQL 2008 versions, you didn't have a backup option. You just had the data and a log to set. Now you have a backup option here. So you can set these, and I'll show you how to set these when I get inside the image. If you do set these, you have to restart the SQL Server instance. So if I set these, and I'll set them, and I'll go in and try to create a new database, you're going to see this showing the old ones, or it'll put them on the old ones. But if I restart this instance, you'll see it's going to pick up the new paths. So be sure that you're smart about where you're placing your data, where you're placing your logs, and where you're placing the backups. You're going to want to, at the least, if you're not using a RAID implementation of some sort, RAID, you know, 5 or 1.0, you're going to want the data files and the log files in separate drives. Remember, your log files contain all of the transactions, all the inserts, all the updates, all the deletes. So you want to make sure that those, if you lose your MDF file, that you don't also lose your LDF file. You need those on separate drives. It's really very, very important. Now, when I do my demo, I've got a single drive in my image here, so I'm going to put everything on the same physical drive. You're going to see Z colon. Just pretend with me that that's a D colon for data or an L colon for log, but I'm going to put them in different directories at least to kind of make my point as to what you'll want to do here to make sure that these don't all reside on the C drive. The other thing we're going to look at is the collation setting. I've already mentioned, I probably kind of beat this up a little too often here, but the collation, this is really critical. This is the default location or collation setting, and you can't change it once you've added it. So let's say that a tad differently. I can't change it at the system level. I can't go to the model database and say, hey, I want the model database to use the collation setting required by SharePoint. Too late for that. I can only do that during the installation. I can, however, when I create a database, I can change the collation during the creation of the database. If I create a database and I want to change the collation afterwards and I populated data, I have to dump that data out, recreate the database with the new collation. And I don't mean back up that data, because if you back up the data, the intricacies of the collation is going to be in that backed up data. You need to export the data, dump it out to a flat file or whatever it may be, and then recreate that database using the correct collation. Easiest way around that, as I've already said a few times, as Bill has said as well, when you do the install, use the default collation required by a SharePoint. Max degree of parallelism. This is how the transactions are handled. You're going to go online and you're going to see all sorts of articles on set the max degree of parallelism to higher based on the number of cores. Bottom line for SharePoint, leave it at one.
Yeah, I mean, basically max DOP or max degree of parallelism is, it's basically the number of processors you employ to run a single statement for each parallel plan execution. Out of the box, you're going to get one, and generally you should just keep that with SharePoint and not modify it. You can set it to zero, which, you know, sets the maximum degree of parallelism, but it's not absolutely necessary. So leaving it at one, basically what that does is it suppresses parallel plan execution. That's what the one setting is all about.
And then during the installation of SharePoint 2013, this would bark at you if it wasn't set to 1. So 2013 was catching your eye and saying, hey, if this is set to 0, I can't complete this install. And you were required to go into SQL Server that's hosting your SQL, so your SharePoint instance, and set this to 1. All right, let's go in and take a look at some of the configuration settings that we have here for the memory and the default database locations. So I am going to jump into my image again. And this is where we left off with the content databases. So let's go back to just our SQL Server environment. And we're going to go to our instance. We've done things that we made modifications at the model database. I'm going to go up to the instance that's dedicated to SQL, or to SharePoint, excuse me. And I'm going to go to properties. And you're going to see I've got the option for memory. And you're going to see this is that ginormous number that we have of 2,147,483,647 megabytes that was allocated, which means pretty much this instance of SQL Server will take what it needs and it'll run over anybody to get there. Okay, so if you do have a server that's hosting multiple instances of SQL Server, or you have a server that's hosting multiple applications other than SQL Server, you need to get some constraints around how much memory this SQL Server instance will take. And so let's say you wanted to give it, 8 gigs, we would make it 80960 or something like that. I think that's 8 gigs. So you would set that. So what this means is it'll take from RAM, the physical RAM, up until 8 gigs, and then it'll stop taking at that point. I know that's not an exact number, but we'll just say 8,000 or 80,000 megabytes, which should be about 8 gigs. You may also want to set the minimum server memory. You can also set that. What this does is never let it drop below a certain amount. So what this will do, we'll say we set this at 6 gigs. What this will do is say, all right, it's not going to automatically allocate all 6 gigs to SQL Server, this instance of SQL Server, but once it achieves that 6 gigs, it's not going to fall below that. So it's not giving it away and taking it back, giving it away and taking it back. It's actually going to hold that at 6 gigs. Now, I don't have this much RAM on this machine, so I'm not going to be able to save these settings, but I want to show you that set a max. Depending on what else is running on the machine, you need to analyze your machine, understand what's going on in that physical server, how much RAM's there, throw for the operating system to make sure that's not going to slow down, and then determine with the remaining amount of RAM what else needs to be, how that RAM needs to be divided up between the applications or between the instances of SQL Server. And if you're seeing that you're constantly following and then 30 minutes later or 20 minutes later, it's growing back up and you're going to have to wait because now we've got two instances and we've got that little wiggle room with that little window, you may want to set a minimum amount of memory on this as well. So you've got a couple options here. At the least, set the maximum amount of memory. Now also on this screen, you've got your database settings. And this is where we get our default locations. And here's our C drive that's got the C colon data, our log, our backups. Now, obviously, this is a huge no-no because you have got your operating system, you've got your page file on the C drive. Now you've got your data files, your transaction logs. So every time you write, you do an insert, update, or delete, the log file is hammered. Then it uses that checkpoint process that we talked about earlier. Now your MDF file is getting updated. Lots of overhead and lots of I/O going on here with this. So you want to make sure that we've got these on separate drives. Now your backup location as well is another understanding thing that we should understand and set that to something other than the C drive. And it's very simple to do. We just go in and click in here and we'll wipe out what's there. And I created an SQL SQL data. This directory already has to exist. So wherever you're going to point to already has to exist. Keep moving my mouse for some reason. We'll go in here, drop this down to SQL logs. I think I created them on this. We'll find out in a second. If I didn't, we'll just shoot out and create them. SQL logs. And then the last one will be SQL backups. And like I said, we just set these here. See if I spelt everything. SQL backup. We don't know if I did backups or backups. We'll throw an S on there and see if we get lucky. And we'll go ahead and do an OK. See if it barks at me. We're just going to do a quick double check on the operating system level. And again, I had the C drive in there. That's not what we want to do. Ooh, it's not here and it didn't yell at me. I thought it would yell at me. So let's do this, maybe when I try to do something. Let's do SQL data. And again, where this is over on a D drive, you have to pretend with me I'm doing this on a D drive or a completely separate drive. Now I'm going to another different drive yet, and I'm setting up SQL logs. And then I'm going to another drive yet, and I'm going maybe to a file share, didn't know I did that. And we're going to set up an SQL backups. All right, so those all exist. So now we'll go back to Management Studio here for SQL, and we go back to our instance level. Now if I go in and create a new database, and I right-click and do new database inside a SQL Server, you'll see our settings are there for the 500-125. It did pick them up from in here on the new settings. Remember I said you needed to restart the instance. Now if I go to SharePoint and come over here and do add a content database, and we're going to call this one, just to make sure I don't mess it up, we're going to call it 22. We'll make this sure. This one has the same settings as the previous ones, 200 and 250, for the maximum number of site collections to enforce the size of our databases. So we'll create that there, and then we'll jump back over to Management Studio. Like I said, you normally have to restart the SQL Server instance for this to pick up that those paths. So we're going to jump back over there. We'll jump into SQL Server to see if it's been created yet, because half the time it's created and we're not there. There's our 22. We'll go to Properties. And we'll go to our Files. And we'll scroll and see how it's got the old path, because I didn't restart the instance. And see how, back to that, what we talked about earlier, the autogrowth setting doesn't come over. Okay, so it won't pick up this new path until we actually go in and restart the instance. And you can do that inside a SQL Server, or you can do it at the command prompt, but you simply do a right click and do a restart here. And once that restarts, it'll come back up. It might complain and say, yeah, you want to restart this? I'm going to say yes. It's going to ask me about the agent. I'm going to restart that. So the agent, remember I talked about the MSDB database. The agent is how things like log shipping, that's how the servers communicate with each other. The agent's responsible for the jobs and the operators and the alerts and the log shipping processes that take place in SQL Server. So it stops the SQL Server agent in order to restart. The SQL Server agent is dependent on MSSQL Server. So it restarted those. So now if we went back over to SharePoint and created our fourth database, which we ended up wanting to do based on the demonstration that we did earlier. Do a control V, call this, what did I call the last one? 23, I think it'll be saved. Try to make sure it stays unique. Call this one 200 and 250. Now we've got our four databases that we wanted to ensure we stay less than 200 gigabytes. And we'll let that crank over here in SharePoint. We'll jump over to Squeal. And we'll go in and refresh that. Here's our 23. And we'll do a properties on that, files on that, files. Again, badness on the autogrowth, but now goodness on our path. So it picked up our path. So if you make a change, or if a DBA calls and says, hey, I made a change for your default locations on your data and your log files, and you go out and create a database, and they're not created, they don't show up in the directories where you expect them to show up, then you'll want to just call them back and say, dude, I think we need to restart SQL Server in order to pick up those settings. So that's how we would just ask them to restart SQL Server at their earliest convenience. Probably can't do it in the middle of the day, but the earliest convenience for them to restart SQL Server. And that would make it easier. That'll pick up those new paths that we assigned here. If we want to change the max degree of parallelism, as Bill emphasized, really not necessary to do that. We go into our advanced permissions at the properties level. And here's our max degree of parallelism. You can just click into any one of these and change those. Again, for the most part, we're not going to mess with that. But if you have a unique situation, and Microsoft says it's probably cool if you change that to a different number, this is how you would come in and modify that number here. All right, so covered that. We've got the new databases. We've got the settings for the location. We have the maximum memory settings. All right. I think that's good for the demo. Let's switch back over. Oops. Let's switch back over here. Modify the locations. And now operating system settings. We can do a full screen on this so it looks a little bit better. There we go. So now we've looked at pretty much between last module where we did database settings and this module where we've done system settings at the SQL Server instance settings. There are some a couple things, one specifically that we can do at the operating system level, and that's setting up the allocation units. And there's some a default setting of 4 that would be beneficial with 64. Now, Bill talked earlier about pages and extents, and so what's the positive of changing my allocation unit to something other than our default or our 4?
Yeah, okay. I think the good news is if you're running Server 2008, obviously it's going to configure it for you. So as you think about kind of your allocation unit size, you're going to be in good shape. But basically 64K is what we would consider optimal. And a good example of which is if you were somewhere in that 4K range, you could pay a 30% performance penalty as a result of an improperly configured allocation unit size.
Wow, that's huge.
So what does that mean? It's not only the performance penalty that you're going to have to resolve or get around, but getting around it's not easy. So basically, in order to configure the right allocation size or right allocation unit size, you need to format the drive, which means you need to migrate all your data off of it, format the drive, and then repopulate your data in order to accommodate for an improperly set allocation unit size. So it's very important to consider what your allocation unit size is. You can use check disk as an example in order to determine what the current allocation unit size is. Again, if it's Windows Server 2008, it generally takes care of itself. So in the interest of time, let's move into verifying some of the operating system settings demo that you have planned for us, Brian.
Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to go check this. We're going to just actually check this out to see where we're at here. So as Bill talked about, the command to check, verify is check disk and then the C drive. And then if it's not the way you want to want it to be, if it's not using the 64K, you can just format your drive. And you know, it's good to format every once or every week anyways, isn't it, Bill? Just run a format. You know, you might want to back it up a little bit. I don't know. That might be just be high maintenance. But if you need to format it so it's not checking, it's not catching the 64K, here's the command for that. File system is NTFS. We want the allocation to be 64K, and this is the volume name, and we want to complete this. So let's go double check here and see what mine is. And we're going to go back in our image real quick. And we're going to go into the command prompt. You need to run this as an administrator to see this. So we're going to do chkdsk c colon. All right, it's the only drive I have on here. And when I enter, so we go, you're NTFS, and it's going to do a quick check disk for you. And when it comes up to the end here, it will tell us what my allocation unit. So if you see down towards the bottom, believe it or not, this is Server 2008, and this is still at the 4K page. So now I'd have to format. So let me just do a quick format. Just kidding. So in order to resolve this, like Bill said, we would need to export anything that's of any worth of any content that we want to bring back here. We'd have to format it using that format command that we talked about. And then after we formatted it, then it would be in the 64K. So which would give us which is better, which is what is the recommended for SQL Server, in fact.
Yeah. And then obviously, if we can switch over to my machine real quick, we'll go ahead and take a look at Management Studio again. I went ahead and put together a number of different commands as well, because as we think about disks, one of the things that you always have to think about when you think about disks in general is fragmentation. Fragmentation obviously isn't just limited to disks, and we're going to talk a little bit about it in the next module when we talk about optimization. But one of the things that you should also be looking at is index fragmentation as you think about your databases. So for example, there's a number of different ways you can do so. I'm still old school. I still love DBCC show config because I like the way the results are presented to me. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to look at my all webs table. I'm going to run a show config. I'll just execute it. And as you can see logical and extent scan fragmentation at 66%, almost 67% for that particular table as I look at that table holistically. There's a number of different ways that you can look at fragmentation, and I think you need to take it beyond just looking at the operating system and take it all the way down to the database in order to determine where you're paying those performance penalties. So again, show config, I ran it against all webs. It's going to show me my highest fragmented table, in this case, 66.67%, we'll call it 67% fragmentation. That was extant scan fragmentation. If you remember from the very beginning module, I talked about a page versus an extant versus a table versus a database unit. So that's, you know, kind of the hierarchical order as you think about the way that data is written to disk. And as I said, when it comes to a page, that's where SQL performs its I/O operations. Everything's inserted to a page, such as rows, and then you end up with situations where you have page splits where you can no longer fit anything within a contiguous page, and then you have to split. So you can look at it using DBCC show contig. Obviously, DMVs, you've got your management views and functions, is the way to go in SQL Server today. So I can run this statement here. And then here is my 66.67%. As you can see, it's on my clustered index here. So what I can do, there's another way I can do it as well. Rather than using Transact SQL, I can just expand my content database, expand tables, and then I can come down to all webs. This is just the one I'm using for the demonstration. I can expand indexes, find my clustered index, which is WebPK, and I can have a number of options. I can actually rebuild or reorganize through the GUI, or I can click on properties, and this is another cool trick. So if I look at the properties on my clustered index, I can click on fragmentation, and there you can see the total fragmentation of 66.67%. If I just wanted to resolve this particular clustered index on all webs, I could do that by generalizing the command and being granular about how I want to attack it. So I can alter the index on webs PK within that table, or I can alter all indexes and reorganize against it. So we can just choose that one. Command completed successfully. We should be able to come back up here, execute. And as you can see, I don't get all of the index level information that I want from show contig. That's where the DMVs come in. So I can run the DMV, and as you can see, we've got 50%. I can come to the UI, do it there as well, and see if this is my problem child. Fragmentation, total fragmentation is now at 50%. So we can reorganize again through the UI if we wanted to. And I can compact large object column data, so you can think about some of that. So what I'm going to do is I went ahead and ran that. Again, I can come back, I can look at it through the DMV, or I can look at it through the actual UI itself. So I can come into properties, look at fragmentation, and I don't like what I'm seeing because it's not resolving, so I can just go ahead and run a rebuild if I wanted to in order to do it that way. So there's a number of different things that you can do in order to manage your indexes via either Transact SQL or via the user interface through SQL Server Management Studio. And then the good news is from a maintenance perspective, we have timer jobs built into SharePoint that enable a lot of this activity. Obviously, from a DBA's perspective, a lot of DBAs are going to want to revert to Management Studio, and they're going to want to manage these things on their own. But I just wanted to quickly bring up fragmentation, that it's not just limited to, you know, allocation unit size. That could be considered akin to kind of row size, and when you end up with page splits, and then you end up with fragmentation. So you can almost map a lot of the operating system level terminology back down to SQL Server as you think about how you manage things within SQL Server. And the All Webs table is one that I just chose to look at because it tends to fragment more quickly than a lot of others. All docs, all doc streams, and all doc versions, obviously, and all docs to streams do a lot of the same things. All docs to streams, again, is a new table in SharePoint 2013 as a result of shredded storage. But I just wanted to kind of illustrate some of that. Since Brian started talking about some of the operating system fundamentals, I just kind of wanted to tie that back into the database aspect as well.
Now, the page splits, are those like split hairs that I get?
Like your split hairs. Much like your split hairs.
Yeah, because my hairdresser has been trying to resolve those for a while. All right, we are going to wrap up with this module here and do a 10-minute stretch. We went through some of the memory settings, and specifically by default, SQL is not cool about sharing or the memory, so it will take what it needs, and it will be kind enough to release it when it's finished with it, but that could cause issues for other applications. So you'll want to make sure that you go in and set at least a maximum memory setting on your instance or instances of SQL Server based on the amount of physical RAM that you have. You'll want to make sure that you modify the default file locations. You don't want your backups, your data files, and your transaction log files all in the C drive. Those should all be on separate drives, if not servers, for your backups. So you want to make sure you modify that at the instance level, as we did with the memory. Max stop, regardless of what you read online, for the most part, leave it alone. Leave it at one for SharePoint. You may see articles out there that say go to 2 or 3 or 4, depending on number of processors. Just by default, for SharePoint purposes with SQL, the way SQL and SharePoint talk to each other, max degree of parallelism, you'll want to leave set at one. And then again, you can check your operating system level to make sure that the NTFS allocation unit is 64K versus the 4K, which will also give you better performance because now your information will be stored nearer each other, we'll say, as Bill explained with the extents. So that would be a beneficial option as well. Take a look at the indexing options that Bill referred to as well for the SQL Server side to make sure that we've got those tables indexed appropriately, those SharePoint tables indexed appropriately. So we are going to take a 10-minute stretch. We'll return back here in 10 minutes, and we'll conclude this course with Module 4. We'll be talking about some more opportunities for fine-tuning, high availability, and avoiding those ginormous transaction log files. See you soon.